You are listening to KZFR FM 90.1 Chico, community-supported radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And this is Ecotopia, exploring ecosystems, environmental, social, technological. We'll have as our guests Emily McCabe and Susan Schrader. They'll talk with us about aquifers, water storage, the concerns of family farmers. Our guests in the studio now are Emily McCabe and Susan Schrader. Emily grew up in Durham. She studied society and environment at UC Berkeley. She interned for environmental nonprofits in college. She's now a California Climate Action Corps fellow at the Butte Environmental Council. Welcome, Emily McCabe.
Thank you for having me. And today I'm here in my personal capacity as a domestic well user from Durham.
And also with us is Susan Schrader. She is a domestic well user and environmentalist who's monitoring activities in our region due to the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, including the newly formed Tuscan Water District. She's become engaged because she realizes that everything in our community relies on groundwater. Welcome, Susan Schrader.
It's a pleasure to be here.
We love you. Okay. I mean, that just slipped out.
Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you. I love you guys, too, and KZFR.
Awesome.
Aquifers are complex and in some ways mysterious things. I always think about water witches who are still finding employment in our area, trying to find that mysterious water gold beneath the surface, because we don't know exactly what's cooking down there. So perhaps you could begin by giving us a primer on what aquifers are about. What actually is an aquifer?
And this is Emily.
Yeah, so an aquifer is a layer of permeable rock, sediment, or soil underground that stores and transmits groundwater. In essence, an aquifer is an underground repository of water. Some of the deep aquifers have been in place for a very long time, but other aquifers are closer to the surface. The amount of water in an aquifer varies depending on both percolation of water from the surface and underground water migration. The earth may look solid, it's actually permeable. So when rain falls on the ground, some of it soaks into the ground and some of that water can reach the aquifer. The other thing to keep in mind is that once water enters the ground, it doesn't necessarily stay put. It can flow underground. Aquifers may be linked to each other above an impermeable layer, and if the layer has a slope to it, water from the higher aquifer can flow into the lower aquifer. Water doesn't just get into the ground by precipitation, but by other forms of percolation as well. Water can enter the ground from river and stream beds. For example, if it rains in the Sierra and that water gets into a waterway such as Butte Creek, some of that water ultimately flows all the way out to the delta, but along the way, water leaks out of the creek and enters the aquifers. Chico and Butte County sit on top of the Tuscan Aquifer, and the amount of water in the Tuscan Aquifer is likely many millions of acre feet, and it's very good quality water. For context, 1 acre foot is 325,851 gallons of water, and is enough to cover an acre of land with 1 foot of water. An acre foot of water is enough to meet the needs of 2 to 3 households for a year. So if there are many millions of acre feet in the Tuscan, you can imagine that it's a lot of water.
Okay, so Emily, what is a subbasin?
Yeah, a groundwater subbasin is a smaller, more detailed portion of a larger groundwater basin. It's often created for easier management and study. A groundwater basin itself is an area of permeable rock that holds and transmits groundwater, and it can be divided into subbasins based on things like geological features, hydrology, or the need for management purposes. We sit on top of the Tuscan Aquifer, but the State Department of Water Resources has mapped subbasins within this area that depend on the Tuscan Aquifer.
And their mapping is more sophisticated than water witches, I assume.
Witches.
We can do a Halloween tongue twister there. So where exactly are the Tuscan Aquifer and the subbasins?
The Tuscan Aquifer underlies the North Sacramento Valley. It runs from near Red Bluff in the north to the Sutter Buttes in the south, and from the edge of the Sierra Cascade foothills in the east to around Corning, Orland, and Willows to the west. Today we will be focusing on the Vina Subbasin, and this subbasin comprises the portion of the Sacramento Valley groundwater basin, bounded on the west by the Sacramento River, on the north by the Tehama County line, on the east by the Chico Monocline, and on the south by the Western Canal Water District, which is in the Butte Subbasin. Both Chico and Durham are within the Vina Subbasin boundaries, and the Vina Subbasin is 185,000 acres in area.
But there are some threats to our aquifer, correct? What are those threats?
Yeah, there are definitely some major threats to the aquifer. The first one is overdrafting. So if people were not taking water out of the ground, the aquifer would gain and lose water in a limited range over time as water flows out and in. That would leave the depth at which you can find water somewhat stable over time. Once people start extracting water from an aquifer, it creates the risk that the aquifer will be overdrafted, meaning that more water will be taken out than will be replaced by percolation and groundwater migration. When that happens, we have to go deeper into the ground to find pumpable water. How deep the water is dictates how deep you have to drill a well. When the groundwater level drops persistently over time, shallower wells will start to run dry, and that's a major concern. This would also affect our groundwater-dependent ecosystems because roots only go so deep. Think about what Bidwell Park would look like if those trees started to die. Then there's climate change. Climate change has increased the risk of overdrafting. With the weather in California becoming more extreme, we experience hotter summers, which creates more irrigation demand and a lot of variability in annual precipitation. Precipitation whiplash is the term for California's rapid and extreme swings between wet and dry periods. In California, this means experiencing intense floods and atmospheric river storms, followed by severe droughts, all of which are amplified by climate change. In the future, there will be both more heavy rainfall and more drought.
So what's the condition of our aquifer at the moment?
Yeah, I'll talk a little bit about the Vina Subbasin. So the Vina Subbasin is in better condition than many of the groundwater basins in the San Joaquin Valley or the west side of the Sacramento Valley. The recharge to our aquifer is estimated to be 220,000 acre feet per year. However, we are pumping 240,000 acre feet of groundwater per year, which is a 20,000 acre foot annual deficit. So cutting overall water demand by 10% to stop the decline of the groundwater level, that should not be an impossible task. It's a solvable problem. It's important to protect our water resources against future droughts or efforts to export groundwater out of the basin. Groundwater is the primary source of water for agricultural irrigation, residential, industrial, and commercial water use in the Vina Subbasin. Agriculture is the primary user of water and are responsible for about 90% of groundwater pumping in our county, but this is also a major economic engine for the county.
We'll turn to Susan now. Susan, what are or will be threats to smaller users, family farmers, non-agricultural domestic well folks? What's the worry there?
Well, dropping groundwater levels due to drought or overpumping can result in higher energy costs to pump the water, potential encroachment of groundwater contaminant plumes, like from old dry cleaning, businesses, total loss of the well if water levels drop below the pump intake, and then that would be the cost of drilling to deepen a well or the cost of a total well replacement.
Which is expensive.
Oh, I've heard, $25,000, $20,000, $60,000. It depends. Yeah. Depends on the kind of, dirt and rock you have to go through and how deep. Also, the cost, you might want to connect to the public system, the private system, Cal Water, but that's expensive. And then there's expensive interim solutions such as installation of a huge water tank on your property for truck deliveries or purchase of bottled water. Programs to assist well owners can be found at bucounty.net under Emergency Drought Response Resources.
Yeah, we actually had to, before we got a new, we deepened a well and then had to drill a new well, but in the meantime, we had to buy water, so water trucks had to come in to fill our tanks. So it's very expensive and extremely inconvenient.
In fact, when we moved to Yankee Hill now 18 years ago, we said the only thing that could kill us was loss of water, though we didn't think about fire at the moment.
Oh, yeah. No, it is. It's scary to think about your well going dry, because that just is everything in your household.
We need water. Yeah. We can't live without water. We have to have it. This is Ecotopia on KZFR, and we're talking with Susan Schrader and Emily McCabe about groundwater in our region.
But let's return to our conversation now with Emily McCabe and Susan Schrader. You've pointed out some of the threats to the regional aquifers. What's being done to manage groundwater are questions. So in this segment, we want to talk a little bit about SGMA, S-G-M-A, the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act of 2014, which mandates monitoring. So Emily, please tell us a little bit about SGMA and the VINA GSA.
Absolutely. SGMA, or the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, was enacted in 2014 to get a handle on overextraction of groundwater. While it is a state law, it delegates responsibility for groundwater planning to the local level. The thought was that groundwater strategies could be different in different topographies and with different groundwater usage patterns. Counties with high and medium priority groundwater basins are required to act as or to form groundwater sustainability agencies, or GSAs, and develop a groundwater sustainability plan, or GSP, to help achieve sustainable groundwater use within 20 years. The goal is to avoid undesirable results. And the five undesirable results that the VINA GSP addresses include chronic lowering of groundwater levels, significant reduction in groundwater storage, degraded water quality, land subsidence, and depletion of interconnected surface waters.
There are three groundwater subbasins in Butte County: the VINA subbasin, the Wyandotte Creek subbasin, and the Butte subbasin. And the city of Chico is located in the VINA subbasin, which is a high priority basin. As required by SGMA, or the Sustainable Groundwater Act, we have the VINA GSP, the Groundwater Sustainability Plan. And a part of any GSP is the establishment of a minimum threshold for groundwater levels. This is the level below which we do not want to go. We don't want the groundwater table to fall to that level, because that is where the previous five undesirable results that Emily just referenced will most likely occur, and the groundwater sustainable agency is planning to avoid this. Minimum threshold levels throughout the basin have been challenged as being too low. They have been questioned by DWR, water scientist on the SHAC, or the Stakeholders Advisory Group, and other knowledgeable community advocates. They are placed far below our historic ground levels, which have occurred during periods of drought. And if groundwater levels are allowed to drop that low, then the water level will be below many domestic wells and below where the tree roots of our beautiful urban forest will be able to reach. And our groundwater ecosystem with its animal streams and plants could die.
So let me ask them then, who supervises these GSPs, VINA? Who's overseeing what happens?
Well, the GSPs, the groundwater sustainability plans, have to be approved by the Department of Water Resources at the state. Mm-hmm. So we submitted our first, we submitted money for grants, and they approved it, but they had some caveats, like, look at your minimum, we'll approve it now, but you need to look at your minimum threshold. You need to make sure about groundwater-dependent ecosystems. So it's all reviewed by the State Department of Water Resources, and they recommend corrective actions. And we will write a new five-year plan in 2027, and it will be based on all the data that we're going to be collecting all through 2026.
So who then has the power to make those corrections at the local level, managing our groundwater?
Yeah, so there is a VINA GSA board that makes decisions about the subbasin. They receive input from the VINA Stakeholder Advisory Committee, or SHAC, that we've talked about a little bit, as well as the Technical Advisory Committee, or TAC. They also share responsibility for managing groundwater with the Butte County Water Commission and the Butte County Board of Supervisors. So there are many groups involved in the management of our local groundwater.
So who are the stakeholders? Who do we have to worry about? Who should we be worrying about?
Yeah, there are many stakeholders in this process. Some have representation on the VINA GSA board or on the VINA SHAC, such as our local agricultural, domestic, environmental, local business, and rangeland users. Then there is the major stakeholder that can't speak for itself, which is our groundwater-dependent ecosystems and the urban forest. If groundwater levels drop too far, our oak trees will die. So it's important to keep groundwater-dependent ecosystems in mind when managing groundwater in our set basin.
We were curious about those stakeholders. Are they described or mandated by SGMA? I was thinking particularly about who speaks for the trees.
Yeah, SGMA mandates that GSAs consider the interests of all beneficial uses and users of groundwater in the basin, including agricultural and domestic users, municipal uses, environmental uses, users of interconnected surface water, federal and state agencies, California Native American tribes, and disadvantaged communities. Originally, domestic well user and environmental stakeholder needs were not given the same weight as other stakeholders in GSPs throughout the state, but that is starting to change. The state really wants all stakeholders to be considered.
So what is the VINA GSA actually proposing to do? And Susan, could you?
Yes. Okay, so the VINA GSA received $5.5 million from a grant from the state Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. And these initial funds have been used to explore remedies that will reduce the demand on groundwater and increase the water supply. Right now, there are 6 or 7 feasibility studies or pilot projects that are in the evaluation and analysis stage, which 3 or 4 consulting firms have been hired to do. Based on the information gleaned from these investigations, the 5-member VINA GSA board will approve projects going forward in the next 5 years. Now, however, we do have one official project, not just a feasibility, but a project underway, which is the Data Gap Information and Data Improvement Project. And this will enhance our understanding of groundwater and surface water through the basin by installing monitoring wells at various depths and stream gauges, and also locate where all the domestic wells are. And right. Figure out what their location is and how deep they are.
So can I just ask for a little clarification in what you just said? So these are wells that are already drilled, or are these new wells that will be drilled in order to monitor?
Oh, okay, so monitoring, there are wells that they have a lot of information for. They've identified wells that they have at least 5 years worth of whatever, numbers. But part of this grant is to add, because we don't have enough. So we're going to add a couple of really deep wells, and then there's going to be shallower wells, and then there are going to be wells on domestic, they're going to measure domestic wells. So they're really trying to bump up what all they're covering.
Okay.
So we have more accurate information.
Right, got it. Okay. So tell us a little bit more about feasibility studies.
Yes. So there are 2 ways to correct groundwater deficit. You can use less water, and you can bring more water into the region. So water levels and water storage can be restored either by demand management, like conservation or efficiency improvements, or by recharge using surface water. And the VINA GSA is leading studies to reduce demand on the groundwater basin through improvements to irrigation practices called precision irrigation, to reduce water consumption, and an extended orchard replacement program that would incentivize fallowing land for an additional year or two between planting orchards. Now, the VINA GSA is also leading studies to increase recharge of groundwater through in-lieu recharge by replacing groundwater currently pumped for irrigation purposes with surface water. And that would involve maybe bringing water down from the Feather River or Butte Creek, or maybe figuring out during heavy storms, how to take water and put it under the ground and through tunnels. So, there's a lot of ideas. And they also, they're looking at, percolation basins, and also Lindo Channel. Could Lindo Channel be a place where they can enhance recharge? That's, nobody really knows, but that's part of what they're going to be exploring.
What they're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But, it's just really critical, which we'll get to later, to have members on the board who really understand all this technical stuff and can ask the right questions.
We've heard a lot about planning. Are there any actual projects underway at this point that would increase the amount of water in the aquifer or solve some of these problems you've identified?
Projects, we don't have any projects. We have a lot of feasibility studies, and we've hired these consultants to come in, and they've been given the go-ahead with this or with that. So it's really, this next year is going to be the big data gathering. Yes. You know, things got delayed a little during COVID, so we really, the money just came in last year, and then they've got it all organized. And so next year is going to be very busy. You might see people in your backyard stomping around in boots or something. I don't know. Yeah, so once all that data comes in, they'll bring it before the board, and the board will look at it, and then they'll make decisions.
So there could be pilot projects up and coming, or?
Yes. They could be.
And that relates, we've heard a lot in the past couple of years about the Tuscan Water District, and some have said they will be implementing projects proposed by the VINA GSA. So how does all that interconnect?
Well, yeah, the TWD did present itself to its members and to the county as being the vehicle for carrying out projects approved by the VINA GSA. And we've heard at water meetings that the VINA GSA is the regulator and the Tuscan Water District is the implementer. And a memorandum of understanding has been signed between the TWD and the VINA GSA to cooperate and collaborate on future projects. Of course, the TWD wants to make sure that any groundwater mediation measures do not adversely affect their farmers. But right now, the GSA is bound by law to protect groundwater use for all stakeholders, not just agriculture, which is why we need diverse voices on the board. So at this point, there are no projects with the TWD.
Okay, that's really helpful too.
Yeah, they're kind of trying to figure out things too, you know, like their fee schedule and all that. You know, you can go to their meetings, you can look them up on. Yeah. And they're very interesting.
Which you two have done.
Yeah.
I'm really glad that you are there. We have not been to those meetings ourselves. We should get there and
yeah, to well, learn anybody more. From the public can go. Just look up Tuscan Water District and they'll tell you when and where it is.
We're now going to come back to our conversation with Susan Schrader and Emily McCabe about groundwater. I'm finding your work, you've really prepared for this show. We're getting in-depth answers of a sort we haven't heard before on this program. So in the last segment, we were talking about the stakeholders. Please tell us specifically about the VINA GSA board. Susan, who is on the GSA board?
Oh, well, it was created by the Joint Powers Agreement with the county to be a 5-member board. It includes 3 member directors from the founding agencies, Butte County, the City of Chico, the Durham Irrigation District. And there are also 2 stakeholder directors on the board, 1 agricultural well user and 1 non-agricultural domestic well user. And these last 2 categories are plainly stated in the Joint Powers Agreement. And that's, we're going to talk more about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell us
more, Susan. I can't wait.
I'm leading up to it.
Okay. Who's on the Stakeholder Advisory Committee? It's going to be important in the next few minutes that we keep these boards and committees and their representation.
I know.
Clear.
The shack. Yeah, we call it the shack. The Stakeholders, Stakeholders Advisory Committee. And it has 10 people on it. It has 3 seats for agriculture, 2 for domestic well users, 1 environmental rep, 1 local business rep, a seat for Cal Water, a water scientist, a non-irrigating rangeland user, and a non-voting Rock Creek Reclamation District representative.
We're not going to ask how those...
3 for, and 2 and 1 and 1...
And 1 and 1. I hope it adds up to 10.
Okay, so there are 10 members.
Sorry. Yeah.
And what power does that committee actually have?
Well, that power, the VINA board adopts the groundwater sustainability plan and makes decisions about managing groundwater in our subbasin. The Vina Shack gives input to the board. They hear the consultants, they pay attention, but they do, and they make recommendations, but they do not get to vote on the proposal. There is nothing to say that the board has to follow their recommendations
okay,
either.
So they're strictly advisory.
Advisory committee. Advisory, yeah.
So we know that you're deeply concerned about the selection process for the board. Tell us the story of recent conflicts.
Okay, here we go. Okay, there is a non-agricultural domestic well owner open seat on the Vina GSA board. The original person, Evan Tuchinski, went off, you know, with the paper, went off with New Zealand, so that opened up. And it is written in the original agreement that the candidate is non-agricultural. However, AGUBC, what is that? Agricultural Groundwater Users from Butte County, is trying to do an end run around that designation and offering candidates to that seat that are obviously agricultural. You know, and agriculture already has their representative on the board, but they seem to want more, perhaps ensuring that the board will always lean friendly, you know, towards the agricultural interests.
And as you said earlier, ag is already taking 90% of the water out of the aquifer.
Yeah,
so
correct.
There is a great need to have
domestic well people. And agricultural interests are also already well represented in the Vina sub-basin. They have one seat on the board, they have three seats on the shack, and then they have organizations dedicated to their interests, like the Tuscan Water District, the Agricultural Ground Users of Butte County, and the Farm Bureau. And in contrast, non-agricultural domestic well owners are the least informed and the least organized of any of the stakeholder groups relying on groundwater. Not having an organization to promote our interests, it is of the utmost importance that we have somebody knowledgeable and strong on the Vina board to represent us.
So, tell us about the specific conflict over the possible appointment of Jim Graydon, who was on the ad hoc subcommittee that nominated him for the seat. Who is AGUBC, and how did they disrupt this process? You've already talked a little bit about the AGBC.
I got some details.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So, on September 9th, an excellent candidate, Jim Graydon, was selected by the ad hoc committee of the Vina GSA board and presented to the Board of Supervisors to replace Evan Tuchinski as the non-agricultural domestic well user stakeholder director. Big title. On the Vina GSA board. Now, protocols for nominating and selecting this position had been followed earlier in the summer with a six-week window in which to submit applications, and the ad hoc committee at the time consisted of the City of Chico representative Katie Hawley and the Durham Irrigation District representative Matt Doyle. And they selected Jim. And at the Board of Supervisors meeting, where they could say yes or no to the proposed candidate, because that's one of the things the county supervisors have to approve them, AGUBC submitted a letter challenging the process, and with it, three applications for candidates. They lobbied the Board of Supervisors to undermine the intent of the non-agricultural position. Mind you, this was a month after the closing date for applications. 6 weeks is an adequate time allotment to complete an application, so asking to extend the deadline seemed unnecessary. And supposedly, these new applicants were too busy with summer vacations at the onset of harvest, which, if they're non-agricultural, why harvest? And back to school activities. And the Board of Supervisors yielded to their demand and set a new deadline for applications to October 10th. And Todd Kimmelshue, who is on the Vina board, did not lobby for the Board of Supervisors. He's on that board as well, to honor the ad hoc committee selection. So, you know, it was his committee that... So, they are... All three candidates put forth by AGUBC should not be considered for this director due to their longstanding agricultural business interests. One is described as a fourth-generation grower. who co-owns and operates a family farm. Another has been instrumental in organizing the Sierra Oro farm trail for two decades and maintains, in quotes, deep ties to the agricultural community. And a third is described as a farmer who served a long tenure on the Butte County Farm Bureau Board of Directors. And this person is also described as having deep agricultural roots. These candidates have not been present at the VINA board meetings or the shack, both of which Emily and I have attended often, and this begs the question how interested and up-to-date their knowledge of our domestic well issues truly is. How do any of these candidates meet the criteria of non-agricultural? And I think it's really important that we distinguish between agricultural well user and non-agricultural domestic well user. These are two distinct constituency with different and sometimes competing sets of interest. Ag wells and Cal Water have wells hundreds of feet deep, while domestic wells are significantly more shallow, which renders that population more vulnerable to drought, overpumping, dry wells, contaminant plumes. We have over 4,000 domestic wells in this sub-basin, yet we're not very organized, and we don't have an organization to represent our particular interests. And I'd like to see one strong advocate for us on the board, and that would be Jim Graydon.
Tell us a little more about why you support Jim. We'll point out, too, that the views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily the views and opinions of KZFR staff, board of directors, or its volunteers. But as we've been saying recently, we also stand by the opinions voiced by our interviewees.
All right. Okay, so I support Jim Graydon, and a lot of us do. He has 40 years of consulting experience in water resources management, water and wastewater treatment, and groundwater remediation. All the phrases that we hear talked about, you know, we're going to do this feasibility study or that one, those are all things Jim has worked on in his career. And the reason that a technical background is valuable is that there will be 6 or 7 current studies wrapping up in the last part of the year 2026. There will be lots of data to compile and decisions to be made, all critical to our groundwater sustainability. And the ability to ask the right questions and get the answers we need to make good decisions is important, instead of just providing a rubber stamp to consultants or staff. I have sat through many meetings of the Shack and the VINA board and observed the consultants presenting their information with PowerPoints consisting of graphs, bullet points in fonts hard to read from the audience, and lots of acronyms. And the information is very technical and goes by quickly. And sometimes it's hard to hear the presenters. And all of this is to say, I don't always understand this information, and I'm not sure how much the board does. There are very few questions or discussions, and the board by and large accepts their findings and proposals. We're spending millions on these projects and are at a critical junction of evaluating projects on their effectiveness and cost-benefit analysis. I feel that confident that Jim Graydon understands this water language, given his extensive 40-year career experience in water resources in Butte County, in Chico, and throughout California. He's very approachable and will communicate with domestic well owners and be a well-informed, scientifically data-based member of the VINA board.
So let's talk a little bit about, that was terrific, as you two are just remarkable. And we're starting with Emily beforehand. I think you should take your notes and we'll print them up and make them available, because there are a lot of people who need to know this information, and you've presented it in a way that we've not heard before,
particularly
given your stake in it. So I kind of lost track of where we are. Did you talk about the meetings, the coming meetings?
Where the selection process stands
okay,
now.
Okay, please pick it up from there.
Sure thing. So right now we are waiting for the ad hoc committee, which is now composed of Katie Hawley with the City of Chico and Derek Sonry from Durham Irrigation District, to make a decision about which candidate to nominate to the Board of Supervisors. We will know who has been nominated by around November 4th. Then there will be a VINA GSA board meeting on November 12th. And there will also be a Board of Supervisors meeting on November 18th, where a final decision about the appointment will be made and where there is an opportunity to give public comment.
So why should listeners care and maybe try to get involved in this process? Emily?
Yeah, all of us are paying for groundwater management. Therefore, you should have a voice in the decisions and actions of the GSA. Additionally, water levels dropping too far will affect all of us, whether our wells go dry or our urban forest dies. So it's important to protect our groundwater for the sake of people and the planet.
And how can people get involved in the process?
Everyone, please get your pen and paper out because I'm about to tell you where to send emails and you might want to write it down. First, you can send letters of support for your desired non-agricultural domestic well user candidate, who may or may not be Jim Graydon. You can send letters to dmcgregor@buttecounty.net, which will reach the Vina GSA board, and clerkoftheboard@buttecounty.net, which will reach the Butte County Board of Supervisors. And I will spell those both out. So dmcgregor@buttecounty.net, that's dmcgregor@buttecounty.net. That will reach the Vina GSA board. And then the other one for the Board of Supervisors is clerkoftheboard@buttecounty.net. That's clerkoftheboard, clerkoftheboard@buttecounty.net. And that will reach the Butte County Board of Supervisors. You can also contact your supervisor directly by typing the first initial of their first name and then their full last name at buttecounty.net. That would be first initial of their first name and then their full last name at buttecounty.net to reach an individual supervisor.
We really want to thank you for this excellent interview. Emily McCabe, Susan Schrader, thank you for being with us on Ecotopia. We deeply appreciate your engagement with the issue, and you've really educated us and our listeners in new ways on this program. So thank you very much for being
Well, we want to thank you. You guys have been charming and welcoming and warm, and it's been a pleasure being here.
Yeah, good, good. We want it to be a pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you so much, both of you.
Nice to have both of you
here. Okay, well, thank you.
Uh-huh.